Hello, Bulls fans, and welcome to another episode of Bulls HQ. Thank you for joining me again this week as we take you through the latest news, analysis, and game action surrounding our Chicago Bulls. Last time we spoke, it was a few games after the Otto Porter trade, and the Bulls were trending upward, with Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine playing at a level that we hadn't seen from either before. That has essentially continued in the couple of weeks since, with the Bulls putting together an impressive month of basketball. And that fact was pretty much emphasized over this past weekend in a pair of games against the Atlanta Hawks, which saw the Bulls pull out a thrilling win in Atlanta against the Hawks on Friday night. That game was one for the ages, as it pretty much wouldn't end, and the Bulls needed every bit of four overtimes to finally get the win, but what a W it was, with LaVine having a near 50-point triple-double, and Markkanen and Porter going for 30-plus themselves. Then again on Sunday, completing a home-and-home with the Hawks, who were visiting Chicago on Sunday afternoon. This time, unfortunately, the Hawks got their revenge and pulled away with a 5-point win against the Bulls, but nonetheless, it was still an entertaining game. So, because we have been given so much more basketball than what we had bargained for over the last two games, there's a heap to get through, and given that the Bulls have been playing some great basketball of late, I thought it would be fitting to get the most optimistic fan among us on the show to talk all things Bulls with me today. So joining me now is a man you may know as C-Red Fred, or simply as the lunatic who calls into Waddle and Sylvie far too often. But to me, he's just Fred Pfeiffer, host of the Chicago Bullseye and Big Red Bus podcasts, and more importantly, my best friend. Fred, how you doing, sir?
Mark, my friend of ears, friend of tears. I'm so honored to be on the show and to bring Bulls HQ to new heights. I'm so glad to be back, man. It's awesome to talk to you, brother. And I got to tell you, I think our relationship has gone to another level with your admission that you love me on the Bull Cash considerations. I almost drove off the road, I got to be honest, when I heard that. So it was pretty good. And I think that was at least some degree of sincerity, I hope.
Well, I'd like to think so. Maybe a touch. Look, I don't think we've spoken in 2019. I think the last time we caught up was last year. So it's a new me, Fred, a new lease on life. And you know, I just want to be thankful for the people in my life, and you're one of them. You're a big part of it. So, yeah, you're a good friend to me, Fred.
Thanks, Mark.
Did that sound genuine?
You know, brother, and I wish... Yeah, absolutely. You are a good friend of me. I think you're very nice.
Thank you.
And honestly, congratulations on the wedding. As I said offline, I'd love to be there. If I would have been invited, I would have been there. But I'm sure it was just the oversight in your part with all the planning and stuff. But hey, I can't congratulate you enough. I'm so excited about it. I'm going to make a big announcement on Twitter when you finally are married. And I can just hear the groans across the United States with the knowledge that you're going to be off the market. So unfortunately for our female listeners, that's bad news. But big picture, your happiness is what matters most to me.
Well, I appreciate that sentiment, Freddie. I truly do. So, but enough of that nonsense. Let's get into the beloved Bull, as you like to say. Let's talk Bulls, because I've got actually a lot to get through, because we've had some pretty interesting games here over the last couple of weeks, but more importantly, last couple of games. Two against the Atlanta Hawks. One was an absolute classic. One not necessarily so, but it was still interesting to see how the teams pulled up after a four overtime game that we saw on Friday night. So I want to talk Bulls and Hawks mostly, but before I get to that, I need to ask this question. So let me get this out of the way. Surely we can do better and find a better slogan than the Red Leviathan stirreth. Can't we do that, Fred?
Don't you love it when I use this language, this biblical language? I think it really brings it up a whole new notch. I almost died laughing this morning reading Darnell Mayberry. Did you read him this morning?
No, I haven't read it yet. No.
Did you catch the one line? All were momentum changing plays that illustrated how Levine can giveth and taketh away. And I reached out to Darnell and said, did I inspire that? You got to be honest. Tell me. And he hasn't written back yet, but I think on some level I did inspire him. I just love, everybody's, you know, while we're going on about this, people, every time I make these kind of prophecies or talking this language, people, I always use a picture in Twitter, and I encourage everyone to check it out. And everybody's like, what is that picture of? It's actually from the movie, The Ten Commandments, when Moses parts the Red Sea. Were you aware of that?
I'm not big on my biblical references, but I assume that was Moses. Yes. And I'm assuming in this point you are portraying yourself as Moses, the Bulls Moses.
What? The Bulls Moses, right. Well, it's Charlton Heston in that famous movie, Parting the Red Sea, and then letting his people cross. And then, as you know, when they get by, the attackers, the Egyptians who were attacking them, get about halfway through, and then the water closes in on them. So, you know, the Red Sea, I kind of like with the sea red. I hope you can catch the similarities there. But
yeah, I've got it.
I do like to talk in these terms because I really do feel, you know, all joking aside, I really do feel that this team is destined to win the title. I know how ridiculous it may sound to you now.
Yeah.
But I do believe, and I've believed it for some time, that these young players are really going to grow into something special. And I'm really happy, and I find solace in the fact that some people are actually starting to believe that I'm not completely insane.
Well, I hate admitting this, Fred, but I have actually become somewhat of an optimistic fan right now. And I don't know if it's your influence or if it's more so Lowry Markkanen and what Zach LaVine have been doing, but my expectations of Lowry specifically, based on what I've seen from him over the last month or so, you know, I've always rated him highly, but at this point, I feel like he's pushing through to another level at a faster rate than I had previously anticipated. So I'm starting to feel like he's redefining his potential development curve for the better. And this is probably me just admitting that here on the podcast. I'm sure you've had these feelings a long time ago, but do you obviously feel the same as I do?
Oh, absolutely. I've always said I felt that he had top 10 potential. And when you come into the league with that ability to shoot at that height, right, immediately you have an advantage over most of the players in the league that you could shoot over almost anyone. And when you have to guard a player like him out at 35 feet, that opens up so much for your game. I wasn't exactly sure he would progress this quickly as far as being able to handle the ball, to distribute the ball. The amount of improvement I've seen in the ball handling and the passing ability is just exponential from what I expected. And I actually feel out of all his skill sets, the shooting is the one that's lagging a little bit more than I expected. I still do think when all is said and done in 3 or 4 years, he's going to be a consistent 40-plus shooter from three-point range, which is absolutely elite. He'll be one of the top 10 shooters in the NBA. And when you could do that and bring every other skill set that he has, honestly, the numbers he is putting up consistently in the month of February, at like a 25-12 type of numbers, I can't find many guys that well. Karl Anthony Towns is probably the only other guy, other big, that I think is anywhere near him as far as offensive talent. And it's just so exciting to see it. He's even surprised me, though. I didn't expect him to have that type of month, and it was just awesome to see.
Yeah, totally agree. I mean, like, even if you just forget the month of February, but just, you know, focusing on his month, on his numbers for the entire season, he's basically averaging 20 points and 9 rebounds, which to me, when he was drafted, that was my best case scenario of him at his peak. But this is obviously year two. He's halfway through his second season, given he missed 2 months of the start of the season. So to be doing this 1.5 years into your career is something I didn't necessarily see coming. Obviously, like I said before, rated Lowry quite highly, but to be basically putting up 20 points and 9 rebounds across the season, but to your point, since February, essentially putting up 25 and 12 and boasting an all-star level PER, he's exceeding my expectations at a fast rate. And I've had to recalibrate potentially what we're seeing from Markkanen. I'm not necessarily going to sit here and say he has top 10 potential, because I think when you think about top 10 bigs, we're talking about guys like Anthony Davis, you know, maybe Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, these sorts of players. So I don't know if Markkanen can get to that level, but he could very well be a top 20 player in the NBA. So that's, even then, probably a height that I didn't necessarily have him sort of reaching. So, like I said, I'm fully expecting, and I'm hoping it's not just necessarily just a hot streak here, but to me at least, the way he's gone about it, it sort of screams that he's changing his development curve, which is exciting, and it's making me a lot more optimistic about where this team is headed going forward.
Absolutely. And I don't know about you, but I was very frustrated. You probably didn't hear a lot of this, but you know, right around the Otto Porter trade, they drag in Nick Friedell from to give his commentary. And, you know, God bless Nick. He's a great guy, but he probably hasn't watched, I would be willing to bet, about 4 Bulls games all year. And he kind of just threw it out as, you know, Lowry hasn't progressed the way that they expected. And I was kind of like, I stepped back. I was kind of taken aback quite a bit to say, dude, Have you been paying attention to his season? You know, like he missed the whole first basically 2 months with the injury. You expect and to your credit, I heard you mention this. You can't expect the guy to just hit the ground running after that type of injury. And he admitted that it was still affecting his shot, even in the February. And, you know, so I think as he's gotten healthier, as the Bulls acquired more talent around him offensively in the Porter Jr. trade, you've seen it. You've seen him really thrive. And as LaVine and him have kind of developed a symmetry, I mean, this is incredible. It really is so exciting because going in the next year, I don't know if you feel this way, but I'm willing to say it now. I think Lauri Markkanen and Zach LaVine are going to make the All-Star team. I think they're both going to make the All-Star team next year in Chicago.
I mean, it's a slight possibility, definitely. I mean, probably more so LaVine, I would say, given he's more established. There's probably less guards in the East that could maybe take his spot. But Lowry, too, he's a chance if they can continue in this form and continue growing at this rate. But you mentioned LaVine there. Markkanen's the one typically getting the shine at the moment. But over the last 15 or so games, I think Zach LaVine, he too has taken the next step. So I'm going to quote you some numbers here, Fred, and these are Zach LaVine's numbers over the last 15 games. He's averaged 26 points. He's shot 51.3% from the field, 42.3% from three-point line, a 61.1 true shooting percentage, 5.9 rebounds, 5 assists per game. So Markkanen is rightfully getting a lot of the attention for his recent ascension, but I feel like LaVine is getting overlooked somewhat here, and I think equally he is showing as much growth as Lowry has over the last, let's call it, 15 games.
Absolutely agree, 100%. I think there's just a natural tendency among the fan base to want to discount LaVine. There was so much of the fan base that was against the match of that Sacramento contract when he was a restricted free agent in the summer. And I think a lot of people, you just naturally want to say, hey, I'm right. And point out for every fall or every mistake that he had. You know, he started out really hot. And then I didn't think he was playing exceptionally well in December. But when you look at the team, it was just basically him and Parker, and there was very little offensive talent around them until Lowry finally got healthy. But I don't see how you can possibly look at LaVine in the month of February and still continue to make that argument, which I do see. Like, you know, I occasionally see people say he doesn't make other people better. And I liked your tweet, I think it was today, where you kind of snarkily brought it up how, you know, a lot of people say he doesn't pass at key times of the game. You look at the Atlanta game on Friday, he had that huge pass to Ryan Arcidiacono and the other huge pass at the end of the game to Lowry, who missed the three. But I think he's been facilitating. That's, to me, the most impressive part of his game over the last 8 games is how well he's been passing. He's been approaching double-digit passing games, assist games, almost every game. And I've been blown away with his progress. And, you know, a lot of this I do think is due to the presence of Porter Jr. Just having a guy on the court who can stretch the floor allows him to have so much more room to do things than he needs to do. So I don't want to just say it's all on LaVine. I do think that's helped immensely both players. But regardless, I don't see how anybody could be questioning the signing anymore. Like, it's a bargain at $19.5 million a year for 4 years. With the numbers that he's putting up, you should expect quite a bit more. Like, I had gotten into an argument with a Bulls fan the other day about Devin Booker or Zach LaVine. I mean, how can you even look at the contracts? He's making about $10 million less. Out of those two players, do you really feel like Devin Booker is a better option than Zach LaVine? That he may be, barely. I guess you can make that argument, but not based on the contract overall. What say you?
No, I would agree. I mean, comparatively as players, maybe you would give the edge to Devin Booker slightly, but at the same time, if I'm having to pay Devin Booker $30, $35 million when I can get Zach LaVine at 20 or even just a shade under 20, I'm taking LaVine. And that's a credit to LaVine because he has improved this season. And a lot of people just want to put it down to his scoring, which has been there all season. And I would say he's probably even improved as a scorer over the last month, given that Otto Porter has made things a little bit easier, as you sort of just suggested there. But you also mentioned that his playmaking is definitely improved. And I think that's the case too. The Bulls have been putting the ball more in his hands. He and Chris Dunn have been splitting their minutes somewhat, so it's allowed LaVine to be that primary ball handler on occasions. And, you know, whilst he still has those frustrating turnovers as he did against the Hawks in that 4 overtime game, It was weird for me to see people being critical of LaVine in his and his turnovers, given that he basically had a 50-point triple-double. He wasn't very far off it. And I don't even know if the Bulls win that game without Zach LaVine. He scored 6 of their 8 points in the third overtime. And people are quick to point out the turnovers, or, you know, he may have missed a pass here or there, but I think they forget that he's still developing too, and the fact that he was able to will the team to that victory against the Hawks. I couldn't be more positive about LaVine, and I mentioned this about Markkanen too before, but LaVine right now, he's exceeding my expectations too.
Almost every metric, he's at near career highs, almost every single one. And one of the other important ones, he's one of the few guys on the team, I think, that consistently gets to the free throw line. That's such a huge thing. I think he's really upped his game in that department this year. And on the defensive end, yeah, I'm frustrated with his off the ball, right? I mean, there's no doubt that's a problem. But I do think he's somewhat improved this season. I don't know if the metrics are proving that out. I just think overall, it's just so ridiculous to keep on complaining about Zach LaVine. And there's people I respect that a significant number, and I can't figure it out. I think maybe it does go back to, you know, just the signing, and anything that this front office does is going to be looked at in a negative light. But I'm hoping they give this guy a chance, because I was a little sour on him, you know, right around the mutiny, after everything I read that he was one of the guys leading it.
Yeah.
But then I talked to Darnell Mayberry offline. I talked to KC offline. The guy's a good dude. Like, the more I hear about him in the locker room, like, people really like him. He's really well respected around the league. He's like a guy that could legitimately recruit. Like, I really do feel that if the Bulls ever get a team that's in contention, he's a guy who's not going to be afraid to take, you know, to really do that. Whereas the Bulls, you know, some of our favorite players on our favorite teams really weren't those type of guys, you know. So, you know, he does have a cachet throughout the league. I like the kid a lot now. I've really come around on him, and I think he's almost beyond criticism. He's 23. He'll be 24 on March 10th. You're right. Like, people act like it does seem like he's been in the league a long time, but I still think he's probably 3 or 4 years away from his prime. Another area where I think he's really improved is 3-point shooting. Is all of a sudden, really, he's up that quite a bit. And what are you going to do against a guy like that? He's another guy like Markkanen. You got to guard him out at 35 feet. And the team it's so exciting to see the offensive potential with him, Laurie, and then Porter Jr. and whoever they add in this upcoming draft.
Yeah, and all of a sudden, from positions shooting guard, small forward, and power forward, the team has maybe, you know, some of the best shooters at those positions from the 3-point line at those spots. So you probably weren't saying that before the Otto Porter trade, but it's amazing just what Porter's presence and just his skill set can sort of, how it can reshape this roster. So, you know, credit to the Bulls for bringing in Porter. I had my reservations about certain aspects of the trade, not necessarily who they sent out. That I thought that was the best part about it, but Porter has really, he's redefined this team for us at the moment, and I think Markkanen and LaVine specifically are the ones benefiting from that. But I want to talk about the Bulls' point guard rotation now, and I want to specifically hit on your favorite player on the team, Ryan Arcidiacono. And I want to know, as he was hitting that 3 to tie the game late in the second overtime, at that point, were you thinking to yourself how wrong you've been about Arcidiacono and that he is indeed an NBA player?
Some of your tweets are so utterly ridiculous about him. I still feel like you're kind of like a parent pointing out every, like, overbearing parent, every little great thing that Junior does. Like, it's something like, oh, wow, look at Junior doing this. I mean, Mark, there's no doubt he was playing awful for about a month. He was shooting, I think, 34%, under 30% from 3. And that's always been the thing with me and Ryan. Like, he's got to hit shots. That's his he's not good enough to acquire massive attention on the defensive end. I love everything. He's such a good guy, and he does play hard. He sacrifices his body, and I've really grown to love how he imitates Lopez. I mean, I think that's one of the coolest things I've seen, and I laugh. I mean, is that not awesome or what? Every time he does something, how he imitates him, I mean, that is fantastic stuff. But, you know, he's back to playing like how he was in the first month of the season, but I hope you agree with this. What we need next year is him to be our third point guard. We need to bring in a starter or someone to challenge Dunn, have Dunn come off the bench and lead that second unit. Hopefully, unless he raises his game in spring, in the training camp, but we got to upgrade that position. And I hope you're not trying to argue that Ryan should be our starting point guard next year.
I would want to argue that simply because I'm talking to you and I know that would infuriate you. But if you're asking me to be serious, then no, obviously Archie Diakono can't be our starting point guard next season. But I think he has a valid claim for the backup spot. I think he and Dunn should be competing for that spot next season, assuming Dunn remains on the team and isn't traded in the offseason. But I definitely do agree that the Bulls need to bring in some reinforcements in that for that point guard position, because I definitely don't think Chris Dunn is necessarily the answer to that spot. So I actually wanted to ask you that question, and that's sort of why I brought up Archie Diakono, so we could sort of transition to Dunn. But what have you made of Dunn, let's call it, over the last couple of months? Has he shown anything to you that he should be around on this team beyond this season?
It's tough with Dunn. I'm still on Dunn Island. I got 1 foot in the boat, though. I thought for large parts of the year, I saw improvement. He was near career highs in almost every shooting metric. And I thought I was at the game against Indiana. That was an absolutely fantastic game. 17 assists. I love his defense. And then on that West Coast trip, he was an utter disaster. And I don't know what was going on. And like whispers about something going on off the court. I know he had his son at the beginning of the season. I know how difficult that could be. And sometimes, you know, off the court issues do kind of, no matter what you do, they can affect your on court play. But regardless, every guy in the NBA has to deal with stuff off the court. So that's no excuse. I think people are a little bit unfairly harsh on him, but I do also see the point that I don't think his game's going to fit with what we have here. I don't know if you listened to that interview I had with Casey, and I've kind of come around on this, and I agree with him. You need to have to point guard position the guy to just do three things: play defense, which he can do, hit threes, which he really can't. And what was the other point that Casey made that we need from? I don't know. I guess distribute, right? Facilitate for others. And that's something he really hasn't done that well, you know, kind of over dribbling. I still believe I wouldn't trade him. I wouldn't trade him at all. He's at an all-time low, arguably, outside of his, you know, after his rookie season in terms of trade value. I think I'd bring somebody in to challenge him, have an open competition at camp. And maybe that's enough to raise his game. I keep on holding out on that, because that point guard position, you've seen a lot of good guys take a couple of years to really, you know, to really build into the type of player at that position. It takes a little bit longer to succeed at that position. And D'Angelo Russell, I mean, I know these guys are younger than Dunn, but they weren't great in the first couple of years. So I still kind of believe in him. I don't want him off the team next year, but I do think you got to bring someone in to challenge him for that starting spot. What say you?
Well, you know, just thinking about what you mentioned there in terms of what Casey said to you on your podcast, which I did listen to, that was a great show. He mentioned the distribution of, or the point guard needing to distribute the ball, hit open threes and play some solid defense. And I'm just sitting back to myself thinking, you know who can do that? Ryan Archidiakono. So,
oh, God. Here we go.
So
he can't hit threes that consistently. What's he shooting on the year from three? Can't be that good.
He's at least 60%, I'd say, off the top of my head. But but no, look, they're basically Dunn and Archidiakono, that is. They're essentially the same age. They both turned 25 in a few weeks' time. They come out in the same draft. Dunn went fifth in that draft. Archidiakono went undrafted. So obviously, Dunn himself has a much higher ceiling than what Archie Diakono definitely has. But I think one has improved whilst the other has regressed. So I think those two hopefully will be competing for that backup spot, as you mentioned, and that hopefully the team can sign someone in free agency that can maybe take that starting position from Dunn, or at least provide some sort of level of competition to it. But it's interesting to think about the Bulls right now, because they've pretty much got their 2 through 5 positions locked down. Absolutely. And it just makes Dunn's growth or lack thereof, I guess, even more frustrating, the fact that we could have this starting five set in stone if Dunn had come along as I had hoped he could this season. We saw a progression last season. He hasn't necessarily taken that step again this season. But the more I think about how, you know, positions 2 through 5 has sort of been set here by the Bulls, the more I want Dunn to find what he should be, but I don't think he's going to get there, which is kind of disappointing. But at the same time, it's been interesting to see actual competent point guard play from a young opposing point guard. And I'm referencing Trae Young here, who has been pretty much unbelievable in the two games that we've seen the Bulls playing the Hawks over the last couple games. So I wanted to get your thoughts on Trae Young. correct me if I'm wrong, I don't believe you were super high on him coming out of the draft. I had my reservations too, but what have you made about Trae Young, specifically in the two games that we've seen here against the Bulls, but more generally about his rookie season?
Well, I think a lot of my concerns have still remained true in the NBA, and almost all of them are on the defensive end. He's a absolute still, I think, you know, catastrophe or it's an issue on the defensive end with Trae Young. And I don't think the Bulls did a great job taking advantage of it. But to me, if you got a halfway decent point guard, you can just take him in the post or out physical him. He's not a strong guy at all. That was all my issues with him. I just thought he was so small. And everyone I had talked to, Darnell Mayberry, who were up close next to him, they all said he was barely 6 feet, if that, you know, 6 foot, 6'1", maybe with shoes on. And that's when you're that small, I just think you're going to have issues. Like, people are comparing him to Steph Curry. Steph Curry, I've seen him up close. He's a legit 6'3". That's a massive difference in size. With all that said, man, it's hard to be impressed with what we saw on Friday and what I've seen from him lately. The two things that really stick out, which I didn't expect, was his vision is just it's insane. He's just an excellent passer. I think he's got an excellent feel of the game. That game on Friday, how many times he drove and just would dish for a guy for a dunk. I mean, he sees the way he sees the court is really special. There's very few guys that have that vision, I think. And in fairness to myself, I said that about Doncic too. That's the thing that impressed me most is seeing guys with that ability to see passing lanes. It's so rare. I don't think that's something that's I think that's almost like a God-given talent, is to be able to see that. And he definitely has that. Now, as far as his shooting, he hasn't shot the ball well for a large part of the year. He's still only at 33% from three, which isn't good. But now, I mean, lately he's starting to hit it at a much higher rate, and it is impressive with how far he can shoot the ball out. He's shooting over 80% from the free throw line, 8 assists. I mean, the guy's he's been great. There's no denying it. And I was talking about this with a friend the other day. Out of all the teams, I brought this up, Mark. I'd love to get your opinion too. If we don't get Zion, and you think of those other teams that are in the lottery, the one team I don't want to see him end up on is the Hawks, because they would scare the hell out of me with Trae Young, Zion Williamson. That would be a team that you could see potentially then rivaling Chicago with a good young core that would grow into something special. Well, what say you?
It's funny you say that, because that's exactly the team I would want to see him on if it wasn't Chicago, because I definitely don't think a team like the Suns deserve another top pick, and I definitely don't want to see Zion go to the Phoenix Suns. They don't deserve that. He doesn't deserve that. I definitely don't want to see Zion in New York. I don't want the Knicks getting Zion when the Bulls missing out on him. That would be terrible. I certainly don't want the Cavs getting Zion. He doesn't deserve that either. God. So if it's not going to be Chicago, no. Then I think it has to be the Hawks, because I think they've gone about the rebuild the right way. And I think they're a team that deserve a star like Zion. So if it's not Chicago, it's actually a team that I would like to see him go to is the Hawks, because of the way they've built it. And I think he would be an awesome fit next to John Collins, who we haven't seen, unfortunately, in the last two games here against the Bulls. But with Trae Young, even Kevin Huerter, who's going to be a really good player as well, you add Zion to that, and they've got another top 10 pick coming this draft as well, potentially from the Mavericks too, as part of that Doncic and Young swap. So if you can add Zion...
They're going to have two shots at it.
Potentially. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's top five protected the Dallas pick.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
But still, they could get pick six, let's call it, and pick one. That would be huge. So, I don't know, man. I would kind of like to see Zion in Atlanta if it's not Chicago. But obviously, I want to see him in Chicago. But if it can't happen here, then I hope hopefully it's with Trae Young.
Well, as a Bulls fan, I don't want him anywhere near the East. So if he doesn't end up in Chicago, I absolutely want him in Phoenix. I mean, what are you talking about, Mark? You're going to create a monster there in Atlanta. If you combine Trae Young with Zion Williamson, that is the one team, John Collins, that I would be concerned about going forward. I look in the future. I know you read my you had a chance to read visions that I had on Twitter where I predicted what was going to happen next year. There's not one team in the East that I feel is going to be close to the Bulls in a few years. Every one of the teams next year that are at the top, I think, are going to get worse. You know, everybody's excited about the Knicks and their two spots. They'll probably end up with Irving and Butler, and I think they will top out about 45 wins, and in the long run, be a disappointment, be looked at as a disappointment. the Atlanta Hawks, if they get Zion Williamson, that will challenge the Bulls absolutely in 3 or 4 years, because that will be a combination that will be almost every bit as good as what we have.
Look, I understand your point, but I want what's best for Zion, and I don't think he deserves to be sent to Phoenix. Look, I would feel for the kid if that was where he was destined to go. We just talked about Devin Booker before, and the fact that the Suns haven't necessarily turned things on. They've got 8-2 last season. They don't need to get another, you know, top pick, a number one pick, and they don't deserve Zion. Zion doesn't deserve the Suns, so I don't know. I'm thinking about Zion too, first.
But I don't love him more than the beloved Bull. Yeah. I mean, I gotta be honest with you. What are you talking about, man? Having good Phoenix isn't bad. It's great out there. I love it. It's nice and warm. Be in the West. he can lay terror on the West. We'll meet him in the finals. I don't want him around here in Atlanta. It's going to be awful. Anyhow, we'll move on. I know what you're saying, though. He's a good kid. I wish him the best, but I wish him the best in Phoenix, not in the East, unless it's with us.
Well, I mean, fair enough. Look, we'll disagree on that one, but yeah, I definitely don't want to see Zion languish on a terrible franchise. That would be, you know, that would be bad for the league. But anyways, moving on, let's talk about Wendell Carter, who we've sort of somewhat forgotten here, and maybe not forgotten. That's not the right way to put it, but I can't help but watch the Bulls with their current resurgence here, with Markkanen and LaVine playing so damn well, and not think about how unfortunate it is to have Wendell Carter out sitting on the sidelines, because we forget that we only really got to see Wendell playing through the dogged days when this team was playing some of the worst offensive basketball that we had seen in a long time. I want to talk about that a little bit later on, but we basically got that version of Wendell sort of etched in our brain. And whilst we're sitting here talking about Trae Young and all these other rookies who have come on this year and have performed so well, it sucks that we didn't get to see Wendell Carter get to play in this open style of basketball with Otto Porter around on the Bulls now as well. So, are you like me, where you're sort of watching the Bulls right now, you're seeing LaVine and Markkanen tearing it up, and you're sort of just wondering or even dreaming what Wendell Carter Jr. could look in this lineup?
I do think about it occasionally. I got to be honest. I mean, how exciting Laurie and Zach have been in the last couple weeks, and how good Otto Porter's been. I sometimes I've forgotten about him. But I definitely remembered him last Friday, because it was basically a layup line. He's by far our best defensive rim protector. And in that game, we would have won by 20, I believe, if he was healthy. He's already an elite defender in the paint. And it does bother me a little bit that we weren't able to kind of see how he would fit next to these two guys as they're playing so well. And I can't wait to see how it's going to look with Porter Jr. there. But I think it's all going to be good. I mean, Porter Jr. And then having Wendell, who's going to be a plus defender, I think it's going to be awesome, man. I said this before on Twitter, and I don't know if you laughed at it. I think I heard it in Cast Considerations. You guys laughed at it. I do firmly believe this is true. In 2 or 3 years, Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr. will represent the best big three in the NBA. And I mean that in that I think they all work seamlessly together. Like, the deficiencies that Lauri has will be covered up by Wendell, and vice versa. Like, he's not going to be ever a great off the dribble player. We got Zach LaVine for that. I do think that Wendell's going to eventually evolve into a very good shooter. I know we didn't see that this year. And that's, to me, the most disappointing part of his season, is that he didn't really get that opportunity. I didn't think he was utilized correctly at all. Everything they were doing was in the post with him. And I think he's going to be better on the perimeter and be Al Horford. Not a poor man's Al Horford, a rich man's Al Horford. I think he's got a lot more athletic ability than Al Horford does. He might not be as good offensively in the post as Al is, but Al's an elite defensive player. I think Wendell Carter Jr. could be every bit as good, every bit as dominant, and in 2 years he'll be a first-team all-defensive player. Remember what I say today, because I know a lot of people listening to this are laughing, but I do firmly believe it to be true. He's one of the best young defenders, interior defenders, that I've ever seen. Ever. So I am very bullish on Wendell Carter Jr. But you know, it's kind of hard not to be, I think Lauri and, Zach have provided solace in his absence, over the last few weeks.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. I mean, it could have been much worse had they not been playing the way they are. It would have been even a tougher pill to swallow with Wendell out. But at the same time, it would have been great to see him alongside those two as they have been balling, to see him sort of being alongside them and cleaning up their mistakes and really just sort of playing in that open and free offense. Like you said, I don't think the Bulls really utilized him correctly at all. He should be a face-up player primarily, and I think there's an even greater spacing opportunity with Wendell in place of Lopez going forward next season, but I guess we'll have to wait until next season until we see that. But I know you've got to go soon, so I just got a couple more questions here. So I just want to quickly touch on this tanking debate that's sort of filtered through the fan base at the moment. And I want to touch on it because it's kind of starting to annoy me. And again, I don't want to play the optimist card because I know I'm getting too closely aligned to your avenue here. But you know, the whole tanking thing's really bothering me. And after every game, after every win, even that impressive win against the Hawks where the Bulls won in 4 overtimes, you still see people getting disgruntled and mad about a win like that. It's really starting to get to me, Fred, so I want to get your take on it. I'm pretty sure I know what it's going to be, but fill us in anyways.
Well, I agree with you 100%, Mark. I mean, they'd have a point if it was last year. Like, I would totally understand that. But, you know, the way I look at it, people need to just start assuming we're not going to get Zion. Even if we had the worst record in the league, we'd have an 86% chance of not getting him. That's the way you should view this as, and just come to that realization. And I think that's the best way of starting this. But realize that stop looking out on the horizon at what might be when you have a player in Lauri Markkanen who's emerging as a top 20 talent without a doubt. And I think he has top 10 potential. Zach LaVine, top 30 talent without a doubt. I think he's got top 20 potential. And, you know, we forget about Wendell, and it's easy to forget about Denzel Valentine and Hutchinson, a lot of the other good young players on this team. But they're all there, too. Like, I think there's way too much focus on Zion saving us. And as I said, the odds are he's not going to be here. So just accept that fact, come to that realization, and also realize that the Chicago Bulls have drafted extremely well when they're in the top 10. And in almost every draft, you see guys drafted at 6, 7, 8, 9 that end up being real difference makers. Paul George drafted, I think, was at 10. Steph Curry at 7. Every year it happens. Murray was drafted at 7. There's always really good players that fall to 6, 7, 8, 9. And the Bulls have really had a lot of success between 7 and 10. I mean, you look at some of the players they drafted, Kirk Heinrich, one of your favorites, not so much one of mine, but he's definitely a good player in Chicago Bulls history. Luol Deng at 7, Jakeem Noah at 9, Wendell Carter Jr. at 7, Lauri Markkanen at 7. I think there's going to be a player like that in this draft. I really do believe that. And to just focus on Zion and to keep on complaining, you're right. You're absolutely. It takes a lot of my enjoyment out of the game. So much so that today I was actually cheering they would lose. I think there was probably a little bit more solid reason for it, but I just don't want to have to deal with all the negativity about it. You know, if they would have won that game, all you would have heard was, oh, you know, now they're going to fall to 5. Well, the difference between 5 and 1 is 10 to 14%, right? Four percentage points. I mean, is that what we're really crying about? I do get it if it was last year. It's not last year. It's this year. So, you know, I kind of agree with you, Mark. I mean, I think this to be complaining about it. And the good thing is, though, there are some smart fans like you and, I've seen Kevin Farragut who kind of are taking the right approach here. I think, you know, what's more important? What would you rather see? And I kind of brought this up on Twitter. What do you think is more likely, that Markkanen becomes a top 10 player or we win the lottery, we get Zion and he becomes a top 10 player? I think over the past few weeks, you got to say the chances of Lauri Markkanen becoming a top 10 player are probably greater than 14%. Wouldn't you?
I don't know about that.
I'd say it's like 1 out of 3.
I don't know about that, but you know, even if I'm not sure about that point, the reason why this whole tanking thing is annoying me is the fact that it's not the Bulls veterans that are getting the Bulls wins right now. It's not like last season where you had Sean Kilpatrick come in over the last month and win the Bulls 1 or 2 games there at the end simply because his agent happened to have an inside track with the Bulls ownership group and front office. This isn't a situation where some random scrub is sort of winning the game for the Bulls. So the Bulls are playing like this because Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen have taken that next step. And that's the important point about this whole thing. They've like we've talked about earlier, those two have redefined their development curve. They've exceeded my expectations, at least. And because they're doing that, the way that we should be viewing the upcoming draft should be somewhat different. Obviously, we want Zion, and every fan wants Zion, and I certainly still want to get that number one pick, and it's still obviously in play. But I don't know. This is a good reality to be in right now, because what we're seeing from Zach LaVine and Larry Markkanen is something that we haven't necessarily seen from them from before. And like you said before, the odds have changed. Things have changed. This isn't 2018 anymore. So to give some perspective to that, you know, the delta between picks number one and number four in 2018, it was an 11.3% difference between pick number one and pick number four. But in 2019, the difference between pick one and pick four is 1.5%. So if that's the case, then we're really arguing about a 1.5% difference. And look, the Bulls have 18 games left. They're four games behind or in front of the Hawks, depending on what view you want to put it for fifth spot. Now, it's unlikely that the Bulls are going to go past the Hawks here in the last 18 games to take that fifth spot. So in all likelihood, they're going to have the fourth best chance or the fourth best odds in getting someone like Zion. So, and again, that's only a 1.5% difference. So I'm not concerned about this whole tanking debate. What we've seen from Markkanen and LaVine have sort of changed the equation to a degree, to the point where I'm not that bothered about worrying about lottery odds like I was last season. So, I don't know. I just wanted to get that out off my chest, because it's something that has been irritating me.
Yeah, I wanted to throw a question to you, too, about, you know, so like DeAndre Hunter, like there's a guy, I don't know if you've seen him for Virginia. He's kind of rocketing up the rankings here. He's a guy I watch that, the more I watch him, and I went to Ricky O'Donnell about him, and Ricky said he's the kind of guy that does a lot of great things, great, but nothing, a lot of things good, but nothing great. And I don't know, you know, the more I watch this guy, I'm like, man, this guy, he shoots the three, handles the ball, plays incredible defense. There's nothing. He's a point guard. He's 6'7", 225. I love this guy. Now he's 21 years old. I know that's a horrible thing in today's game, but I really do believe he's the kind of player that I think could fall to 6, 7, or 8 and end up being the best player in the draft. I don't think it's out of the question that could happen. I know maybe this draft Zion clearly be the best, but I think this guy could be better than Cam Reddish. It's to me there. If you look at, there's no doubt DeAndre Hunter's played significantly better than Cam Reddish, but I think most people will say, well, Reddish has probably got a higher ceiling, whatever. I mean, who knows? It's not worth, you know, complaining about every 5 minutes. And I want to get your take on something else, which is part of this argument, which is all the anger about them not releasing Rolo, who, according to Will Perdue, he wants to be here again next year. And my point was, does Robin Lopez help or hinder the progress of Larry Markkanen and Zach LaVine? There's no doubt to me he helps it. Does he help with it? Does he help with their development? Why would you want to get rid of a player like that? What's your take on that whole situation? I haven't heard your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's unquestionable to me that Robin Lopez certainly helps the development of these young players. So that's definitely fair. I wouldn't argue against that. And I was of the view that the Bulls should get rid of Robin Lopez, but that was probably a month ago when obviously Markkanen and LaVine hadn't taken this step, and it was obviously before the trade for Otto Porter, where the Bulls had, you know, Jabari Parker and Bobby Portis off the bench who could play the power forward and center minutes in place of Robin Lopez. But now, behind Lopez and Markkanen, all you have in the big department is Felicio. And let's be honest, he's not a credible NBA player either. So they don't really have any big options, to the point where I guess they have to keep Rolo around. And like I just argued, he is important for the development of someone like Larry Markkanen specifically, but even Zach LaVine too. He sets those great picks for a ball handler like that. It's obviously advantageous for someone like LaVine. So I don't hate the idea of keeping Robin Lopez around. The lone thing that the Bulls could really do to improve their tanking position is probably waiving or releasing or buying out Robin Lopez at this point, but I don't know if it's worth it. I don't know if it's worth it. They'd have to bring in another big off, because you couldn't just play Cristiano Felicio 48 minutes at center, so they'd have to do something else in that space. But I'm not that too concerned with it, because Lowry has been so good, and Zach LaVine too. They've been so good that these kind of little marginal things of maybe keeping Robin Lopez or not, it doesn't bother me.
It's amazing how far you and I have come together over the last 2 years. I mean,
it's concerning
when
to
you
me.
First started
really
berating me on Twitter. on Twitter. He first started braiding me on Twitter. I think it all started around Tibbs. But since a lot of these issues have, like, you know, fallen off the wayside, we've really come into an agreement, and it's really a beautiful thing. As I think all of us, as the team gets better, I really think we're all going to be one uniform cord. And then it's going to be such a beautiful thing in 2 years as we all celebrate the 7 title, holding hands and singing Kumbaya as Larry Markkanen raises the beautiful trophy. I can't wait, I mean, man. It's going to be great. It's going to be awesome.
That may be the case, and I certainly hope it is the case, but I can't end on that note, so let me end on this question, which hopefully does draw some level of division. But I want to know from you, do you think Denzel Valentine could outrun or outjump a 42-year-old Vince Carter?
I would have passed on that question. I'm really angry. You know, you really pissed me off today. I couldn't believe when I had brought up, was it today or Friday, when I had brought up, imagine, you know, I'm painting these scenarios like, how good our second unit is going to be. Let's just assume we sign a free agent point guard who starts, and then you got Dunn on second unit. And I brought up Hutchinson, Valentine, and you know, whoever the draft pick is possibly on that second unit, how much better we're going to be. And then you throw out there, now I remember what it was. I brought up Seldon Jr., who I really like. He's going to be one of the best 12 men in the league. 12 men in the league. And then you came back with this vicious put down of Valentine. You had to turn that into, you know, a Valentine put down. And I just didn't have the energy, or I wanted to stay on the, but I was really angry because Valentine, people forget how he shot 38% from three last year. He was probably our best 3-point shooter. He's an excellent passer. He was one of the leaders on the team in assists. He's an excellent rebounder. There is nothing on the offensive end that Denzel Valentine does poorly. And I think he was about ready to just emerge into this really rock solid rotation player in the NBA. And his ankle injury cut it short, but he's a more talented player in every facet of the offense than Seldon is. I like Seldon, but he's not as good as Denzel Valentine. He's not as good as a 3-point shooter. He's not as good of a passer, not as good of a rebounder. Better defensively, sure. But, you know, let's not let division here. Let's come together on this. Don't you agree?
Could you ever see Denzel Valentine hitting the ground like Wayne Seldon did the other night against the Hawks and getting onto that loose ball and creating points for Zach LaVine the way that Seldon did? Could you ever see Valentine doing something like that?
No, but
sacrificing his body for the betterment of the team?
No, but I could never see Seldon putting up 34 points against the best team in the East as Denzel Valentine did on St. Patrick's Day, the St. Patrick's Day Massacre. Do you remember that? Only less than a year ago?
Unfortunately, you've given me the YouTube link far too many times. So, yes, unfortunately, I do recall that day. But,
Seldon play was great. Regardless, let's not sow division. Seldon's going to be a good part of this team, and so is Valentine. Together, they're exactly what you need in this NBA. Good wings. You know, Seldon's a little bit better defensively. Valentine's a little bit better offensively, coming off the bench and being ready to step up. He'd be. Seldon's really impressed me, though. I mean, can you believe we got that guy for a bum like Holiday? It's insane. One more thing. I want to point out for everybody who's negative, and now you've come around. I'm going to see Red Mark. I love it. Your positivity is so infectious. But I want to point out there's still some non-believers, I'm sure, that listen to you. Listen to this. Almost every single move since 2017 was met with negative reaction by the fan base, right? Let's go through it. Butler.
Sure.
Negative. All right. Butler trade. Let's do it. Butler trade, negative reaction. Wouldn't you concur? I'd say 90% negative.
Yes.
Would you now say that's a home run for the Bulls? Yes, right?
I would not say it's a home run, but it's looking
very
nice.
It's a triple,
nice.
Then. In your eyes, it's a home run in mine. The pick of marketing. I don't know about you. I was at the Bulls' Doug Tonis party. The whole room groaned. Anger. Pizza being thrown. It was just the ugly situation. That was a grand slam. I think we agree at 7. Larry Markkanen. Yep. Yes.
Definitely. Yep.
Nico trade. Now, I know you're probably going to say this was a strikeout. I think it was a double. I think it's a potential homer.
Definitely a strikeout.
Hutchinson. Okay. It was not a strikeout considering Nico would have probably, we had to get rid of him no matter what, right? You understand the concept of trading him and getting a number one pick for him was probably a home run, right?
Well, it wasn't a number one pick. It was a first round pick. But yes, I understand the premise of why the Bulls had to do it. I didn't think they had to give up a second round pick or take on dead salary. But sure, they got it. They got a first round pick for him. Good for the Bulls. Go on.
Can you give it a single? Single? All right.
I don't understand baseball terminology. So can I just say, like, right. He hit the ball, but he hit it out cricket. Into the fans where it's not a home run, whatever you call that.
Inside the park homer? Is that what you said?
No, they connected on the bat with ball, but it didn't necessarily hit a home run. It went out. What do you call that?
Foul ball.
Yeah, that's the word. Foul. It was a foul. It was a foul ball trade.
Devolving in the baseball talk here. I can't believe it.
All right. Well, this is all I know about baseball. So.
Wendell Carter Jr., the Wendell Carter Jr. draft pick. I'd say that was a home run at 7. Very good. Four stars out of one out of four. Levine restricted free agency match.
I was okay with it.
Yes, you were okay with it, but I'm saying I'd say Fick was angry with that move. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I would maybe potentially agree.
And in retrospect, it was the right decision. The Holiday trade, beautiful move.
Yes, most would agree with that.
Otto Porter trade.
A good move.
Yeah. So my point is here, Butler, Markkanen, Nico, Wendell Carter Jr., Levine, Holiday, Otto Porter Jr. All of those moves were met either the majority of the fans were outraged, to mild anger, and all of them, in my opinion, were home. Or very positive things for the beloved Bull, with the potential exception of the Nico trade. I don't understand the negativity. It's not commensurate with the actual results. And so let's get some positivity here. I love it how you're turning positive. I love it how, I think this is a good thing for us, big picture, and I think we should not dwell in the valley of despair. There's very good things happening, and they will continue to happen for the beloved Bull.
Well, I mean, you're the Bull's prophet, Fred, so if you say it, it must be true until it doesn't happen, which is often, so I don't know how to feel about it, but look, for now, I'll go with it. So let's say it's going to happen, and we'll take that wave of optimism, and I'm happy to accept it at the moment. Let's end it like that.
Can I have really one more minute with two more quick predictions? All right, and I want to get, do you think yes or no these are going to happen? Is that okay?
Of course, go ahead.
All right, here we go. Kyrie Irving's going to leave Boston, yes or no?
Yes.
Kawhi Leonard's going to leave Toronto.
Yes.
Jimmy Butler is going to leave Philly.
Maybe.
50-50, let's put it there. Regardless, we just named two of the three players on those teams. Jimmy Butler's probably the third best or second best, depending how you feel about the other players. All those teams are going to be worse, and all of them are ahead of the beloved. I mean, I don't understand what do we need to do as a fan base to realize there are brighter skies ahead for the beloved Bull? On that note, I bid you farewell. Congratulations, my man. I'm very happy for your marriage, and look forward to seeing all the pictures on Twitter and on Instagram. Is that where you're going to put it?
I don't use Instagram, but I'm pretty sure I've sent you a friend request on Facebook, but I don't think you've accepted, so that's kind of rude, but I'll ignore that for now.
Are you serious? I didn't know that.
Yeah, how dare you?
I didn't know that.
I'm trying to continue this friendship, from Twitter to Facebook, but you've just ignored me. Hey, that's extremely rude.
I didn't mean to do that.
Yes, thank you for anyway.
I get like literally 200 a day that I don't even know. So
bullshit.
I just like Facebook a lot. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
People love me in the local airwaves. All right, my man.
All right. Well,
I got to love you.
Fred,
you're the best,
appreciate
Mark.
Your time. Thank you, sir.
Take it easy, bud. Bye.
All right, folks. So that was Fred. In fine form, as he often is. I love Fred. I do. It's always fun talking to that old fella, and hopefully you guys enjoyed the conversation here between Fred and I. It'll probably be the last show that I do in the next sort of 2 weeks or so, as Fred sort of alluded to. I'm off to get married this weekend, so I'll be away this weekend and the next weekend too. So in the meantime, obviously, jump online, follow all the other Bulls podcasts, follow Fred at CBE Fred. You can tune into his Bulls podcast, Chicago Bullseye and the Big Red Bus, but there's a ton of other Bulls podcasts out there. Cash Considerations just come to mind. I was on their show last week. Obviously, Locked On Bulls. There's plenty of others too that you can obviously be following into in my stead whilst I'm away, but I should be back hopefully in the middle of March. But I do appreciate you guys tuning into this episode, and I do appreciate you guys sort of putting up with my irregularity of shows over the last sort of month or so. Life has gotten in the way for good reasons, obviously, but I do appreciate you guys sort of sticking in there and tuning in. When I do pump out a show, your support does mean the world to me, so very much appreciated. In the meantime, you can follow me on Twitter at MKHoops. Follow the podcast on Twitter too, at BullsHQPod on Twitter. So appreciate you tuning in. Thanks to you for doing that. We'll speak again soon. But in the meantime, hopefully the Bulls continue playing this brand of basketball, and hopefully we continue seeing Larry Markin and Zach LaVine take the next steps as they've been doing for the last 5 or so weeks. So on behalf of my guests, C Red Fred, this has been C Red Mark signing off. We'll catch you all again in a couple of weeks' time.